Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 114 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of Inter Como at the San Siro, which finished 2-0 to the hosts. Goals from Carlos Augusto in the 48th and Marcus Thuram in the 92nd minute. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by a special guest today. Johnny has been unable to make the last couple episodes with the flu. Although if it was, you know, if you were to ask me, I think he's probably being a little bit of a pansy. But we have the incomparable Nima Tavali-Ruzzari joining us today. Nima, thanks for jumping on. How are you feeling after Inter picked up 3 points here to keep pace with everybody else?
Relieved. Just relieved. And the fact that it was that goal, that finish, leaves a very good taste in everyone's mouth, because it was a frustrating game. We're going to get into it, but it was a frustrating game. But the fact that Marcus Thuram, after Lautaro, comes out and says, well, you know, he's the goal scorer now. I've gotten a different role. And then he finishes that off with that goal. After Marotta came out and, pardon my French, took a giant cagata on the head of Jerry Cardinale, who scored one of the most amazing own goals I think I've ever seen an owner do at this level. I have to be honest with you. When I read his statements, I was surprised. I'm sure we're going to talk about that too. But it was important. It was important for Inter to win. It was important for Inter to win. And the fact that they did it like that with Thuram, the striker who is Inter's main man in goal this season, for goals this season, is very, very good. Because that was just pure class, pure inspiration. Yeah. And we need Thuram to be this good when Lautaro isn't. So,
yeah. I mean, there's this game definitely, there's a lot of narratives that have been continued based on some of the performances today, as well as, you know, what the story was coming into the match, which is really where I want to start. Another thing, on top of what you just mentioned, also rotation in the back due to several different injuries, like didn't know how that was going to look. We'll talk about what we might be able to take away from that back three today, but let's go ahead and start with the Cardinale versus Beppe Marotta little face-off here, which I think was quite easily won by Marotta, but I also don't think...
That's the thing. It was such an own goal because he's wrong on the facts. And if you're wrong on... Like, the thing is, when I read that statement, the Harvard Business School paper, and his statement there, a part of me was like, that's the kind of level of intellectual discourse you expect from Milan Twitter. Yeah. You know, some anonymous account with a meme for his profile photo. That's how they talk. This is Milan's owner. And he comes out and says the most demonstrably, stupidly untrue things that are so easily disproven. And it just goes to show how he, you know, Milan fans, I've got lots of Milan fans who are furious with him, saying, you know, you just scored another own goal. You don't know how to read the room. You don't, you know, you're just embarrassing yourself. And of course, Beppe Marotta, he was annoyed, but he was very concentrated, and he came out there, and this was like peak Marotta. He just came out there and, you know, I can read what he said. He says, I didn't want to say anything. However, now I think the time has come to respond. These statements are out of line. They're disrespectful. They hurt the image of the club. I think Cardinale is confused, because it is true that these last few years our majority shareholders have had financial difficulties. However, already a couple of years ago, they were supported by Oaktree, who now own the club, and they have drawn up the guidelines. However, Inter's management is a completely different matter. We comply with financial fair play and with the national licenses, who are very rigid with respect to financial criteria. We have gone from an annual loss of 246 million euros to 46 million euros, during which we have won the Supercoppa and the Scudetto. And since it's Christmas, I'll end with a little bit of irony. We won the second star, and we're the only club in Milan to have achieved this. It's just, I can't believe...
Every single point was perfect. Like, that's what needed to be said.
Exactly. And he said it so politely, so distinctly, so succinctly, and he ended it with that little battuta just to finish off the fact that, you know, Jerry, you know, go back home, come back when you're ready to dance with the big boys, because it was embarrassing of him to say that, of Cardinale to say that, because it's not true. He again conflates Suning's finances with Inter's finances, and it's they are not the same. I'm sorry, but they're not. And you think a finance guy from New York would know that, but he still decided to say that. And to me, I think, of course, he understands that. But the fact that he would say that suggests to me that they are under pressure over there. Things aren't working the way they planned. They're not happy. The fans are furious with them. I mean, you see Milan fans literally celebrating Marotta, dismembering, eviscerating Jerry Cardinale, which tells you everything you need to know. And they say he's tone deaf. They say he's stupid. I mean, I've seen it from in every language known to man the last hour from Milan fans saying Marotta did the right thing. He's an idiot, Cardinale. And it's really astonishing that he would say such a stupid thing.
You've been a very vocal proponent of when there's a tax against the club, that management comes out and they push back with these official statements. Did Marotta touch all the box with this statement?
He ticked everything. He was in control. He was annoyed. It was a strong statement. It was on point. It was focused. It was disciplined. It was polite. But he was annoyed, and he has right to be annoyed. And he ticked every single box. He said what was false. He said that his falsehoods had damaged Inter's reputation. They were erroneous. They were wrong. And maybe he's confused, and then explained the situation. And then drove that home that, well, actually, the people who helped fix the finances when the previous shareholders took out the loan, they laid the financial guidelines. Now they own the club. This is what we have done. We've gone from minus 246 to minus 46. We've continued to win. What are you talking about? And of course, you know, the second star, which Inter won in their faces with Milan as a home team.
I mean, perfect way to end the statement.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cardinale just shat the bed. I mean, let's be honest. He shat in his hands and clapped. And he did it to one of the most shrewd, one of the most well, you know, shrewd, old, you know, been around the block, I know this is my game, you know, Jerry, go home, you're drunk kind of comment without even getting too annoyed. Just basically, yeah, little boy, get out of here. Like, and he just ticked every box and it was perfect.
Do you think that this ends the war of words back and forth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, even journalists who don't support Inter, who are anti-Inter, have rinsed Cardinale for his statements, because they're just factually untrue. Everyone has, literally everyone, from, you know, people who hate Inter have said Cardinale is way out of line here. He doesn't know what he's talking about, which is extraordinary. That, and I can't remember a Milan owner or a Milan director making such an own goal in a very long time. I'm really surprised that he would do that, because this is now, again, the fans are already pissed off with you, and now you go out and you're tone deaf. You say things that are factually easily disproven, factually untrue. Marotta comes out and just embarrasses you and eviscerates you. It's astonishing how tone deaf and stupid this was by Cardinale.
And I think also, like, Interisti should be very appreciative of having someone with the experience and savvy of a Beppe Marotta, like, at the helm, because frankly, it's not untrue that Inter has had difficulties over the last several years, like throughout the entirety of Marotta's tenure, but his interactions with the media and anytime he gives a statement, he's always reassuring the fans that we're competitive, we want to win all of these competitions, like our absolute aim is to be competitive in all of these competitions. And he doesn't, but anytime he references like the balance sheet or staying competitive from a financial standpoint, it's always reassuring the fans that the expectation is that there's not a drop off in terms of the on the pitch product. And I don't think that Cardinale quite grasps the message that he's giving to his fan base when he makes statements like that.
He doesn't understand the politics of Italian football. It's obvious he doesn't. And I just think it's embarrassing. He doesn't understand the politics of Italian football. He doesn't understand that certainly you have to be careful with what you say. Italy is a very, very, it's a political minefield in terms of the footballing ecosystem. And you when you say things that are demonstrably untrue and you make these own goals, they have, you know, you lose standing, you lose, you know, you people just generally, you lose political capital because you come across as an idiot, and you can't be able to do that. You're a person who can't look like an idiot. You can't look weak, and he's been made to look like a clueless idiot. And the fact that he wasn't there for Milan's 125th birthday, this comes on the back of that. And then they, of course, refinanced the loan with Elliot. They paid off some more, and they moved the extension of when that needs to be. I mean, it's stuff like this is already political hot potatoes in the football, from a political sense. And then come out and do this is just, well, yeah. You know, thanks. You know, what is it Napoleon said? Never interrupt your enemies when they're making a mistake. And this one was a huge, huge, huge mistake by him. And Inter correctly allowed him to make that mistake, didn't say anything. And then Marotta came out before the game and eviscerated him for 35 seconds. And that was the end of it.
Yeah. And I do love that the timing of the response, that it wasn't an immediate like press release on the website afterwards. No. It was like, it's done.
No. Don't even, you know, dignify it with that. No, don't even dignify it with that. It's always smart to do it in front of the cameras, because there's video, there's tone, there's intonation, there's how you present things. And he worded it perfectly. It was Marotta, peak Marotta. He was on form, fine form.
Yeah. For every clause, like the, you know, 5 million purchase for Empoli and Esposito's contract, every one of those clauses that you go at Marotta for having, like, this is the reason why you brush them under the rug, because he's able to manage a situation like this. I got to be honest with you,
I can't criticize him for it. I'm not as big on Esposito as you guys maybe are. I think the only one that has any talent in that family might be the youngest one in Serie B. But even him, I'm not too...
Francesco.
Too excited over. Look, I think if you can get 5 million or whatever we can get for him, whatever deal they've got, that's great. Do it, sell it. Because I think my opinion is he's not going to start for Inter. He's not good enough to start for Inter, which means that he's a rotation player. I don't think it's a wise decision to let young players be rotation players. I'd rather have experienced players be rotation players. I want young players to play, because I think that's the only way they improve. So for me, get, you know, if you can keep control of Esposito, have a buyback somewhere like Fabian, that's great. If not, arrivederci, good luck, Salvo, you know, good luck, Sebastiano. Say hi to brother Salvatore, and that's it.
Well, we've got a question on that, so we'll answer that later on in the pod, but let's get into this game a little bit. So 2-0 victory again, like, important to keep pace, especially after Atalanta, like, another late goal for them. It does feel like team of destiny kind of stuff, where any slip up by Inter at this point almost feels like, you know, while numerically certainly not going to be out of the race, it's just, it's a matter of like momentum that you don't want to lose too much of it. And that's what made a game like this one super important. So two things. You have someone like Average Joe who's tweeting, you know, very mature performance, a kind of game that Inter might have fumbled a couple years ago. And then also you, at a couple points throughout the game, mentioning a bit of arrogance. So which one is it, this performance? Was it more a mature side seeing through a game that where they don't have their best, or was it arrogance? Like, is that why we didn't come into the game with the same sort of energy that we would have been expecting?
It was arrogance up until the first goal, and slightly after the arrogance towards the end. But in between, it was a, you know, especially the reaction after half time. I thought Inter were excellent. The reaction to that first half, which was very disappointing and annoying, and they weren't concentrated. They weren't resolute. Their passing was, the sharpness was missing. They annoyed me. They really annoyed me, because I felt that, yes, although you know, Como pressed well, they kept their shape. All of those things are true. They still, that there were spaces to attack. There were things to take advantage of, and Inter just lacked the sharpness and clarity and concentration to do so. Well, in the second half, they came out angry. They were focused. They were resolute. There was crispness in their passing. There was tempo. There was movement. And they scored, deservedly. I mean, it was a completely different Inter that came out. And then they dominated, and then they relaxed. And that's what I don't like. So, yes, you can say it's a bit of both, really. But still, these games where Inter against the smaller teams go into the last 10 minutes and we're biting our nails because you're just leading by one goal at home, always at home, is something Inter need to address, because, you know, play with fire enough, you'll get burned. And I don't like that. But look, it's at the end of the day, it's an Inter who are decimated in defense. They play every 3 days, lots of injuries, another clean sheet. They won. This will build confidence. As long as it builds confidence and they react the right way instead of becoming complacent and arrogant and saying, well, you know, it'll sort itself out. Just kind of lull themselves into a false sense of safety.
Do you think that, like, typically, Inzaghi's done a ton of rotation this season, but typically it's maybe two or three players at a time. This time it was, you know, eight new players against Udinese. Do you think that played a role in the performance today, just getting the guys going a little bit?
I think I disagree a little bit there. I think between the Champions League and the Serie A, I mean, against Arsenal, he rotated seven players. I mean, we've seen him do that quite a bit, seven, eight players all the time. And he's been very clear on that. I have to rotate. We play every 3 days. I have a 25. You know, he said it again last week, you know, last game after Udinese. When I say that I have 25 starters, I mean that. Like, he keeps underlining the fact that he's going to play the whole squad. And he doesn't really have a choice either. So he's you know, he has to do it because of this insane season that we've got with five competitions, 10 and a half, 11 month long season. So he has to do that. So, you know, you just got to get into the rhythm and do, you know, and try to get the rotations right. And he has gotten them right. We can't fault him for that. I think that is part of the reason, like you said. That there is a little bit of, well, it disrupts the rhythm, doesn't it? When you constantly have to fidget with the starting lineup, of course it disrupts the rhythm. But they don't have a choice; they have to.
Yeah, the coming into this game, obviously, De Vrij has filled in perfectly for Acerbi for several matches now. But he's been playing a lot. Before the game, he comes out. Darmian picks up a knock as well, so you have a makeshift back three of, even though, you know, Bissek and Carlos are in their natural positions, Bastoni slots in at center back, which we saw him perform well for Italy during the Euros. But today, you know, it looked a little different. I don't think it was a bad performance by any means, but it wasn't super reassuring. What did you make of Bastoni as a center back?
I don't like him there. I don't want him to play there. I think we're wasting him there. I think when he plays to the left, that's where he's world class, and he is world class. I'm not too keen on having him there at all, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I think he, you know, I don't think he does a bad job, but I just prefer to having him on, you know, just slightly more to the left, because then he can play these unbelievable diagonals and these fantastic long balls, that
where he's able to get some more space.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing to me how teams continue to sleep on him. He can play those balls in the first minute. He can play them in the 80th minute. These, you know, his vision, his passing, his ability to deliver these crazy, almost like quarterback NFL like passes. It's just astonishing. He is truly, truly a wonderful, magical, world-class gem of a player in the final third. And this season, in the attacking phase rather. And then this season, the last 12 months or 18 months, I'd say we've seen him improve so much defensively as well, and put in the kind of ugly work as well, which is, you know, if he gets that side of his game up to a world class level, then we're talking without a doubt the best defender in the world. It's not even close. He's already there in the discussion.
Yeah, I thought early on in the game, he looked like he was struggling a little bit with Como's press. And granted, they were getting after him, but potentially it's, you know, easier for him to be able to handle it from the left center back position than from the center back position. Another player was up in the air whether or not he would be getting the start was Barella, working off a knock. Were you, you know, surprised to see him in the lineup? And do you think it was the right call to put him in there? Like, you know, again, we're talking about this fixture.
I think when they evaluated it and he was like, I don't feel any discomfort, I'm not injured, I'm all right, then they have to play him. Barella has to play. But like, you know, Barella, Bastoni, these guys, Thuram, like right now, these are the first names on the team sheet. Çalhanoğlu, like these guys have to play. If they're fit and if it's a game that Inter need them to start, then yes. So yeah, absolutely. I think it was the right decision. He didn't look injured. He didn't look like he felt something. He looked all right. He looked good. So yeah, of course, I think, you know, once you get the all clear from the medical team and the player himself, you just go with it.
What do you think of his body language on a few occasions today?
I was sharing it with him. He was angry and I was angry. Usually I've been very critical of, I don't like the negative body language, but today I think they all deserved it. He was the one who really wanted to win. He was the one who was driving Inter forward. He was Inter's engine and he was pissed off when he didn't get the ball when he should have had it. So, you know, I know that, you know, people can get pissed off at him at sometimes, and I've been one of those people, but here today I thought it was warranted. And because I didn't think he exaggerated. I mean, it wasn't like in the Champions League semi-final when he threw a hissy fit like a three-year-old toddler in a supermarket, but like it wasn't like that. Here it was like, come on, what are you doing? I mean, that's normal. And you have to let Barella be Barella as well. So you don't want him to like censor himself too much. It's more when he goes off on these complete unhinged toddler, you know,
starting to get, you know, antagonizing the referees a little bit. There were absolutely two opportunities in the first half. One that Lautaro should have laid him off. The other that Di Marco should have laid him off. You know, it's understandable that he didn't get the ball and he got upset. But obviously his body language is always going to be something that comes up for Interisti because of how demonstrative he really is.
Yeah, but he exaggerated back in the past. Like, I mean, if you remember, again, for me, nothing will ever beat the Champions League semi-final when he's lying on the grass, pounding it like a three-year-old in a supermarket whose mum has said you can't have chocolate on a school night. Like, that's that kind of shit is just like, dude, you are the father of three kids. But this wasn't that. This was more, you know, come on. Like, what are you doing, Di Marco? Crisp passing, concentrate. I like that. I don't mind that at all. But yeah, I mean, there's a balance, isn't it? There's a thin line in the balance.
And it also shows the magnitude of a game like this. Like, yes, you're playing a team that's, you know, part of the relegation battle, but those are the games in Serie A that you need to be clinical and you need to be at the top of your game for.
Exactly.
So totally understandable to see him react like that. One player who has been a topic of discussion for several weeks now and who's not helping his case every time he touches the pitch is Lautaro Martinez. It wasn't just Barella that was upset with him. You saw even Tejan's face after he scored the ball across the box and he wasn't able to get there. Like I said, we've been talking about it. I think Johnny is seeing something physical with him, that he's a little bit behind it. I'm seeing something mental with him. I think it can't really be discussed, the fact that this has been his worst season in an Inter kit. What do you think is his problem right now that he's just not able to get going?
Look, I think we have to remember we're talking about a player who has played nonstop for 3 years and he's going to play nonstop for another 2 years. Let's remember the World Cup and the Club World Cup. So he's burnt out. I think it's obvious he's burnt out. I think it's mental because it's physical. I think it's more, it's one of those situations where if you can't, your body isn't responding to doing as easily as as it used to, so to speak. And that frustrates him because I think that gets in his head. And I think that is something that is going to that is cause of frustration, and then it becomes a mental thing. And so it's just like one thing leads to another and becomes a vicious circle. I do think that now is that it's correct to rotate him.
I think
now we've tried it with him. I think he's one of those players that has to be rotated like everybody else. I mean, 7-8 players every game. I think Lautaro should be one of those you rotate, because I wouldn't play him against Cagliari. Or actually, to be honest with you, it's weird, because I think he's been better away from home than at home, just like all of Inter. I mean, this is really Lautaro's Inter. Away from home, Inter have been fantastic. At home, that's when the problems have been. So I'm like thinking, well, as long as that's true, play him away. You know? But Inzaghi's decided that, no, Como at home was more important. I get that, because Como are a tricky side.
He wants to get him going.
Yeah, he wants to get him going. All of Inter want to get him going. But, you know, at this point, I think I'd rather just, you start Thuram, and then you look at who can play next to Thuram. And then it's either Correa or Taremi right now. And
Do you think that Lauti made a mistake giving that interview a couple days ago, where he's basically like, people are undervaluing me a little bit? Because it does put pressure on you to perform on the pitch. And a game like today where he doesn't, it's just, you know, there's going to be more of the chatter from Inderisi calling for him to sit down, and that he's not doing so well. Is it a mistake for players to talk like that in season while they're in the midst of a bit of a slump?
I think it's a mistake by him to talk like that after the Ballon d'Or. I think what he said during the Ballon d'Or is fair. Inter backed him up. But for him to keep on banging on about it is a mistake, yes. I think enough is enough. You know, how much are you going to... Like, okay, we get it. You don't feel appreciated. Great, okay, great. Now what? Like, enough. It's been three months of this now. Around the Ballon d'Or discussion, I get that. That was relevant to the topic. But since then, it's like this has become some sort of a mantra with him, and some mantra at Inter, where Marotta's come out and said, yeah, we feel that Lautaro isn't respected enough, essentially. You know, he's undervalued. And it's like, well, that's... There's only one simple solution to that, and that is get into form, score more, you know, do better, you know? But so I do... It is starting to annoy me that he keeps on banging and yammering about it. I think he should, you know, try to stay away from that. Again, in and around the Ballon d'Or discussion, then it's topical. I get that. But after that, just move on. And I feel that that's, again, part of the... He's tired mentally. I don't think there's a mental problem more than fatigue. I think this guy is very, very tired mentally, more than physically. I think mentally he's exhausted. And I think that's why I would rest him. I would not play him more than once a week. I would maybe not even play him against Cagliari if you don't need to.
Yeah. Is there a world where he is unable to eclipse 20 goals in all competitions this year?
Oh, he's not getting 20 goals this season. He's not getting 20 goals this season. I just don't see...
He's 15 away, and it's... Yeah.
I just don't see that. I'm sorry. Maybe he can get... So that means that he'll have to get another 10 goals in the Serie A, and then 5 goals in the Champions... Like, I don't know, man. Or Coppa Italia and Super Coppa. Yeah. I mean, it's not impossible, but I just don't see him doing that this season. I think this season the goal scorer is Marcus Thuram. Lauti is someone who helps build up. What I want to see from Lauti is crisper passing, better touches, cleaner touches, easier movement, you know, stuff like that in the build up phase. I don't. For me, the goal scoring is not the priority right now. For me, with him, that's Thuram's job.
Yeah.
You know. So I think for me, what I want to see from him is more cleaner touches, better touches, more fluidity in the final third when linking up and passing. That's what I want to see for him this season more than anything.
Yeah. So you bring up Marcus Thuram, obviously gets his goal to tie Retegi at the top of the Capocannoniere, 15 goals this season. You know, you had come into the season saying you thought that this would be his year as far as the goal scoring for Inter. Mm-hmm. Is this playing out how you thought it would, or is he hitting a different level than... You know, any of us could have expected.
I expected him to score more easier goals, and that's why I said predicted that he would be Inter's top goal scorer and he would score 20 goals at least in the Serie A. But now he's done that, but now he's scoring also these difficult something out of nothing goals, which he used to do as well. And if you can combine those two, well, then Retegi, watch out, because then Thuram's going to be the top goal scorer of the Serie A. You know, so especially with Retegi's injury as well, and he's kind of, you know, been a bit of a slump as well recently, form-wise. But yeah, no, it's playing out exactly like I thought, in the sense that he scored more easier goals, more tap-ins, more kind of goal poachers' goals, playing simpler in the final third or in the finishing positions. But he's also maintaining those crazy, you know, spur of the moment individual brilliance stuff as well, which makes him. And that is, I mean, we know he had it in him. I didn't think he was going to lose that, but if he can maintain, you know, if he can maintain both of them, then Inter are laughing. But yeah, so 12 goals now in the Serie A, he's equaling Retegi, and it's important to stress this: not a single one of those is a penalty. Every single one is from open play. That's very impressive. So he's so important for Inter in the build-up phase as well. I mean, he is the number
one. His hold-up play today was unbelievable.
Yeah, but it's like he's fast, he's technical, he's powerful, he's strong. He's becoming like this, you know, like a little bit like Retegi. These steps that I say about Retegi, that Retegi's taken steps to become the complete prima punta. Well, Thuram is as well. He's they're both kind of growing their game, becoming complete prima punta. I still think Retegi's better in the air than Thuram is. But I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Retegi's one of, I mean, he's an absolute animal in the air. Thuram is good. Retegi's more of a poacher than Thuram has been. He's developing that side of it. With Thuram, it's more that he's always been a great at linking up and passing and dribbling, but his finishing has been bad, whilst with Retegi, it's the vice versa. So they are developing, both of them. But it's interesting to see both of them going head-to-head like this. But again, not a single goal from the spot. All from open play. That's incredibly impressive.
Do you think Serie A MVP is a two-horse race between Lookman and Thuram at this point?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the two. And I think it'll be simply decided by who wins the league. If Atalanta win the league, it'll be Lookman, regardless of how many goals he scores. And if Inter win, it'll be Thuram.
Yeah, I think that's how it'll play out as well. Carlos Augusto, better left wing back or left center back?
I like him as a left center back. I thought he was all right. In Inzaghi's system, I might add. I like him as a left center back. And that was the plan. Remember, before TJ Buchanan's injury, that was the plan this season. He was going to be alternate with Bastoni as a left center back. He's good in the air. He's a great passer, great crosser. He's slow. He's not as quick, not slow, but he's not the fastest guy in the world. And in this system, he's very good at transporting the ball, which is very important when Inter move forward. And he's one of those players who do it in this kind of mezz a la channel, not winger, not centrally, but kind of in between. Him and Bisek do that really, really well. And hopefully Pavard, when he comes back, and he can start doing that as well. But yeah, it's
especially effective when Di Marco is out there hugging the touchline, allowing Augusto to burst into the box. Mm. It is a real weapon for Inter. Speaking of Bisek, who just I don't think he had the best game of his Inter career today, solid nonetheless. Yeah, solid nonetheless. Reports coming out this week, both West Ham and Tottenham interested in Jan Bisek, on top of the reports that Inter is going to be looking to make investments this summer, self-financed. Does that mean that Bisek is seriously on the chopping block after signing a contract extension?
If someone pays 80, 60, 80, 90 million for Jan Bisek, you take that and run. Like, there's no discussion. That if those kinds of offers are coming, they're going to take it. Of course they're going to take it. Why wouldn't they? That's lots of money. 80, 90 million euros. I mean, obviously, I still think he's still a diamond in the rough. I don't know, you know, I think he's a good player, but I still don't know how high his ceiling is, if you know what I mean. I'm still kind of, I don't know. I think it's still very touch and go with him. But of course, I want to keep him because I think he's an interesting young player. I think Inter did a really good job scouting him. He's worked really well, and he said himself before the game, he's improved tactically a lot. That is the weak side of his game. What I do like about him, and he did it again today, he has this remarkable quick ability to recover really fast when he's caught out by just one or two steps. And yeah. I love the fact that he is remarkably good at blocking shots without them going past him. Like, you know how some players block and it ricochets off their foot and goes wherever? It doesn't happen with Bisek. Every time he sticks a foot out, he blocks the ball, the shot.
He's like a hockey goalie.
Yeah, he's like a hockey, exactly. And defensively, that's the aspect of him. That, and together with his remarkable ability to recover quickly within a nanosecond when he discovers that he's caught out. And he's very quick to react to that. Those are the things I like the most about him. And I love to see, but I still want to see him be a little, you know, with all young players, they can still improve everything from, you know, concentration to, you know, work, you know, tactical awareness, et cetera, et cetera. But no, I like the plan.
Another Inter scouting opportunity that took place today was likely Nico Paz, who not only
sign
is
him.
Inzaghi
sign
speaking
him.
About him.
Sign him. Sign him. Jesus.
I get nervous when even Beppe is getting asked about him and mentioning just how talented of a player he is. We know that, you know, Madrid does have the ability to bring him back, but probably not the long-term fit for him. Where there's smoke, there's usually fire. Do you think this interest is concrete and they're actively looking to bring him to the San Siro?
I think they are. I know that there is. I mean, we all know that Inter want to sign him. It's not even a secret. The question is if it's feasible. And the fact that Inter are interested, that Inter see him, find him very, 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 a very interesting player, that they think he ticks the box of players they want to build, that they want to start buying next summer, and that Inter are definitely keen on him and want to buy him is no secret. The question is the feasibility of it. He is a wonderful midfielder. He's so mature for his age as well. That is a deal that with Mkhitaryan getting on a bit, that's a signing you want to make.
Could you see him be developed into a regista at some point?
I don't know. Inzaghi's
he's got physically, he's a big kid. Like, I think, and he's not done growing. Like, I think his body type could lead him to being, you know, shielding the defense. But I also, he's so exciting, you know, near the goal that you kind of want him to stay at Metzala. But
for me, I want him as a Metzala. I think Inter need to look elsewhere for regista. I think Samuele Ricci or Tonali is someone they should look at, even though Tonali isn't a traditional regista. But again, Inzaghi's system, there are no traditional registas, really. That's why I think one of the reasons that Christian Aslani is criticized so much is that when Hakan comes off and Aslani comes on, Aslani's a classic regista. He doesn't make the movements. He is not as dynamic and he's not as positionally aware and intelligent to make those kind of runs and positional shifts that Hakan does. He's a classic regista. Hakan really isn't. He's a hybrid. And I don't want to see Nico Paz there. I want to see Nico Paz as a Metzala. Although I have to say, today, you know, the regista role that Inter play when Hakan is there, it's so fluid because the regista is not just Hakan. You know, positionally, it's not just Hakan. It's always Hakan that starts it, but it's not just positionally always Hakan. Sometimes it's Mkhitaryan, sometimes it's Barella, sometimes it's Bastoni. Look, Inzaghi's Inter is so fluid. But I don't want to see him there. I want to see him as a replacement for Mkhitaryan long term. And even maybe if Inter want to play a 3-5-1-1, maybe as a tip in that number 10. I really think he's that good. I think he's big. Like you said, he's powerful. He has wonderful technique. He's got very, very, very impressive vision for a young player of his age. Decision-making is great. He seems tactically very versatile and understands football, a high football IQ. So I absolutely want Nico Pasta. It would be wonderful. And we all know that Inter want him. But the question is, okay, it's another Hakimi situation. Because if you remember, when Inter signed Hakimi, Real Madrid had an option to sign him. So it's in one of those situations where what do Real Madrid do? Obviously, they want money if they're going to give up someone like him, like they did with Hakimi. So it's a tricky situation, you know. Show us what you're made of, Beppe.
Well, you know, with Hakimi, it kind of came out of nowhere, and this has been so much discussion about him, and likely for the next several months, it's going to be so much discussion. So if we don't end up getting him, I feel like there might be a lot of disappointment from Interisti. All right. Let's get into some of these questions. Anything else about the game that you want to talk about? This might be the first Interviews pod in history where we don't mention Dumfries. The classic skying one over the bar was there. Few missed crosses, but I don't know that I want to totally kill him for something but that we're pretty used to seeing from him.
Yeah, but it's also, this is who he is, man. Like, just, you know, you can't expect him to be what he's not. We know what he is. He's actually improved tactically in terms of tactical awareness. They use him better. But he's not the most technical fella in the world. And he's never going to be the most technical fella in the world. And that's fine. You know, he's going to do these things where he powers on and wins the ball high up, passes it out right correctly, gets the ball in, and it's a simple finish. And he gets a field goal instead. And it's like, well,
yeah, you can make a pretty lengthy compilation of misses that were exactly like that, all from Dumfries, just skying it right over the bar. That's for you, Johnny. I know you're gonna be listening to this later. That's for you. We had to sneak that in here. All right, let's talk some questions from the fans of Interviews podcast. All right. At DB Iceman 10, Nima has been such a staunch proponent of the Super League. Where does he stand on the reform concept of unified league, and when does he think it will actually launch?
Does he mean not this new Champions League format, but the one that they proposed midweek?
Yeah, I think that's the basic rebranding.
Yeah, I think that's a. To be honest, that whole air came out of that project. They've really mismanaged that project so much, from the way it was launched to how when they won in the in the European Court of Justice, which was a very clear victory for them, they didn't manage to capitalize on that. And I think that for the time being, I just don't see anything happening. I wish it would. Because, like I said, with reports coming that now the Premier League are moving towards the Netflix system, which means that they're going to start distributing their own league globally. I mean, the others need to do something. But I just don't see that happening anytime soon. And if it does happen, it will have to be because, you know, the way that English football has said that they're never going to allow this and this and that, I don't have a problem with that. Screw them. You know, I want it to happen without the Premier League clubs. Let them go to Norway in November for a couple of years, and then we can talk, because they need these European nights. Let them travel to, you know, all these non-EU countries once the EU Super League is launched, and they, you know, once they play Norway and, you know, all these other sides in November, October, when it's 1 meter of snow and it's minus 15, and they've done that for a year, then we can start talking about how much they need these European nights. So I hope it happens, but it feels like that project has been, the air has gone out of it a little bit, and it's more of a, you know, keep this going and then maybe strike and be prepared, be better prepared. And when there is something you can do about it, strike when the, you know, this time don't mess about with the execution like they've done already a couple of times.
Have you been liking this new Champions League format? I've been enjoying it. I like seeing different matchups. Like I don't need to see.
I have to be honest with you. I've liked the format. I love the draw. I love the format. I just think it's at least 2-3 too many games. I wish there was the same number of teams as it was before, but this format, if that makes sense. Yeah. I love the league format. I think there's too many teams that shouldn't be there. They're not good enough. And it's already a congested fixture list. So I'd like to get rid of some of the smaller teams, keep the same number of teams in the league, but this structure and this format, it's made it much more interesting. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Like I don't need to see two games against Red Star, but no. Being able to watch like Leverkusen, Man City, Arsenal, Leipzig, like that's Monaco. That's going to be a fun game. Like these are teams that are playing pretty fun football. So I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, the group stage. I mean, last year the group stage it was boring, wasn't it? I mean, it was just snooze fest. Now it's actually fun to watch these games. You know, it's been spicy conversations and interesting, you know, games.
Yeah. All right, we answered a bunch of these already, so let's go with at Pedro Rowe 9979 and then 4-4s. Why isn't Sebastián Esposito's return to Inter talked about? 7 goals plus 1 assist in all competitions. So we were talking about this early on. You mentioned him being a rotation player. I think it would be the same situation here. I really want him to succeed. I had tweeted one of my hot takes before the season started was that I thought this would be the year he'd enter himself into the conversation to get on the plane to go to 2026 with Italy. But I just don't think we have a need for him to come back. And also, Empoli's going to exercise their 5 million option, and then they're going to make a good amount of profit on him. Does he have an Inter future for you?
At this moment in time, no. To be honest with you, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think he does. Because who's he gonna, like, he's not gonna, okay, so again, Arnautovic he's gonna leave. Correa is gonna leave. It doesn't seem like Inter are going after Jonathan David, which I think is a mistake. They don't think it's worth it. I think it's a mistake. I think a 24-year-old is for on a free transfer, if you get him there, it would put you in a good position. But if they feel that tactically or financially it doesn't work, then it doesn't work.
He's asking for a higher salary than Thuram.
Yeah. Well, then he can go to the... I mean, then he's not going to come to Inter. It's as simple as that. I would have preferred if they would have gotten someone like that. I think it would have put them in a good position. I wonder if someone pays him that kind of money. I'm not entirely sure that Europe is open to that. I think it's looking more and more that clubs are not too excited about high wages, if I'm honest. Long-term high wages, even if it's on a free, because it's difficult to sell players if they don't succeed. They'd rather spend more on the transfer fee and lower wages and then be able to make some of that back. That seems to be the trend. But. I like I said, Arnautovic, Correa going out. Hopefully, you know, Thuram stays, Lautaro stays, Taremi's going to stay. So you're looking at, we need at least one more striker, minimum. Who's that going to be? I would have loved if it was Jonathan David, because I think he would have fit perfectly in Inzaghi's system. But it seems that that's cooled down quite a bit. He wants the big payday in the Premier League, it seems. And, you know, it is what it is. But Sebastiano Esposito, I just don't think he's good enough to do that at Inter right now. I really don't. And I don't think he will be for at least one or two seasons. I understand you need to be patient with young players, but at the same time, Inter have an obligation to fight for trophies and to be competitive in all fronts. And they're not going to do that with Sebastiano Esposito right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's the same age as Santiago Castro. Santiago Castro would be a bigger investment, but I think ultimately the higher ceiling. Exactly. So I'd rather see them make a move like that. All right, let's go with a voice message from Filippo Cazzinculo. I wonder,
Gianni or is it Victor? Who the hell is this?
I wonder who this can be. I have not listened to this beforehand, so if we need to edit this.
You're going to have to edit this if it's...
Hey guys, first time caller, long time listener. What's going on with Johnny? Where is he? You know, the people want to know. me specifically. That's why I'm calling to ask. And what's going on with Lautaro Martinez? Can we talk about this guy? Last time I seen this many poor runs was in my underwear. All right? Man's got to figure it out. So please, can we talk about that? He cost Buchanan an assist. I don't understand. Please, you know, please answer that. Thank you. Oh, and Nima, real quick. You like the flip-flop a lot. Is there a scientific reason to that? Are you just a big supporter of Gianluca Di Marzio? Thanks, I'll hang up.
Oh, my God.
Wow, thank you, Filippo Cazzinculo. Yeah, I really,
That is absolutely not John Mark.
No.
Definitely not John Mark.
No. unable to make an appearance.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant accent as always, isn't he? He's such a guy. He's so good with the voices, isn't he?
Yeah.
Literally, I think felt he like should I was be a regular. To Mick and the Mad Dog there for a bit. Like he literally yeah. sounds like one of the callers to them. That's well done. Yeah. Well done as always. Get well soon, Gianni. Buon Natale.
Keep calling in, Filippo. We love we love hearing from you. All right, I think that wraps it up here. Really appreciate you coming on, Nima. Everyone that listens to this podcast knows where to find you, but why don't you just plug your everything you got going on these days?
Yeah, so thanks. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Italian Football Podcast, we just did a Serie A mid-season review. You can check that out on all podcast platforms, rather.
Is that Monday a Patreon exclusive?
No, that's for everyone. It's the Monday thing. Like the Monday episode that we did this week, because it was not exactly the most exciting games. I mean, we felt like we didn't want to crowbar in because of this, the table is at, like, looks the way it does with these games missing and this and that. So we felt like, you know, let's not crowbar that in when there's actually bigger games coming in. Let's do that now when there's not too many exciting games going on. So we did a mid-season review, tops and flops. It's out on all podcast platforms, YouTube, etc. And then we always do a Q&A pod, which is fastly becoming the most popular show we do. People sending in their questions. And of course, and then of course, interviews that we've done. I mean, this, I was just looking, going through everything this year, and we really had a really good guest list. This is probably one of our best year for guest lists. We, from Materazzi to
Lecabiol,
to these Arsenal legends, Lauren, and Liverpool legend, Mark Lawrenson, and so on. So it's been really, really fun.
Do you plan on doing more partnerships with clubs similar to what you have going on with Udinese?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to, but it's not that easy. It's a difficult business. And you know, it's not, you know, it's just to be clear, we don't have a partnership with Udinese. We have a really good relationship with them, but we have a partnership with an agency that works for Udinese, and so it's kind of that. But yeah, no, we love doing that, and there, you know, we love doing interviewing that kind of thing, because we, you know, it's fun to do in the sense that we get to ask the questions we think that are never asked, it's fun to get to know these guys at a club like of Udinese stature, you know. You know, we had Udogi before he went to Tottenham. We had Samardzic before he was going to go to Inter, and then everything that happened, and then I was at Atalanta. And it's, you know, we had De Olofeo, who'd been at Milan and Barcelona. You know, it's fun to talk to a club at that level, because you get to talk to players who are either been going to the top or have been at the top and a little bit further down. So it's fun to, it's nice to pick their brains when they're, depending on where they are at their careers. So yeah, I mean, we're constantly working. I mean, I constantly talk to a million people a week. So yeah,
I mean, I think it would be really beneficial for a lot of the young up and coming Serie A talents to expose themselves to, you know, the English speaking cultural audience, like, you know, a Warren Bondo, for example. Like, it'd be a great opportunity for him to jump on and just, like, introduce himself to the community, get to know him a little bit better. And, you know, these things make a difference in terms of your stock and your PR. So,
no, it's also the clubs are very, especially in all clubs, not just Italy, they're very, very careful of how, which players, what the players say and how and this, that and the other. And it's a minefield, and you have to be very careful.
They need to be media trained.
Yeah, and you can understand that, because of course for them the players are assets, and they don't want them hurting themselves, and they don't want them harming the club, and so on and so forth. So
yeah.
But it starts. Well, it's a fun thing. So we're definitely going to be doing more interviews. I mean, we do one interview at least every month. We're going to continue doing that. You know, we've had everyone from, you know, we've had the Serie A CEO of North America on this year. We've had players. We had Paul Ince. We've had, you know, former players, you know, current players. It's you know, we tried to mix it up a bit as much as possible. I mean, I'm really happy to, you know, grateful to everyone that's come on. But the ones that I think I particularly enjoy are the ones that we do, for example, with the local Italian journalists. That we do when we do the Mercato special. We do a deep dive on one club. If it's Roma, if it's Napoli, if it's Inter, if it's Juve, if it's this, that, and the other, you get so much insight by talking to them and hearing their, you know, and giving them follow-up questions and picking their brains. And also Andrea Loiacono, who's the match analyst for the under-17 Azzurri squad, when they won the Euros. That's one of the interviews that I really, really enjoy doing the most.
Yeah.
And the most bizarre interview I've done is, of course, Mussolini after that entire situation with his joke or hoax about the Trump shooter being Marco Violli. Is I still can't believe that happened to this day. Yeah. I mean, that image of Jon Stewart on the Daily Show with Michael Violi's photo on is the most surreal. It's still, did that happen?
The mainstream Alessandro, crossover. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Marco Violi becoming mainstream political content in a presidential election year in the US is like, I don't even know how to, like, did that actually happen? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, is that real life?
Yeah. You know, living in a dream.
Yeah, it's like, how is this real life? You know, that, you know, stuff like that is fun too, but it's just so bizarre.
If you could do me a favor and maybe the next crossover you do is Miguel Delaney, because I know Calcio Twitter would love to hear from him.
Yeah, but the thing is with them is that, I mean, I've it's so funny to me because as a journalist, someone who's worked as a journalist for 12 years, you know, as an independent journalist, you know, I find these egos and I find these this sensitivity that they display so ludicrous because like they are so sensitive.
Yeah. And you're a public figure and you're saying something fairly, it's not controversial from us, like, just, you know, it's debatable at the very least. Yes,
exactly. Thank you. It's okay. Yeah. But they get so sensitive about it and they get all, and it's about their egos. It's not about the topic they're covering because they have an agenda. And it's, that to me is hilarious in and of itself. And when we found, I mean, we were recording our podcast on when he was having a meltdown and blocked us, we weren't even active on Twitter. Like, that's how ludicrous this is. Like, the Prem face thing has become a thing. I mean, let me give you an example. I can't remember if this were this year or the other year that happened, but Max Rushton at Guardian he had an absolute meltdown over this. Because of some throwaway tweet about being a Prem face, which really triggered him. And he was talking about it in broadcasts on TV and radio for 3 weeks afterwards. And, you know, or Martin Samuel in the UK, who I had a little fun with when I was on Talk Sport. Like, he wrote a bloody column about it in the Times. Like, do you know what I mean?
They're telling on themselves.
Yes,
upset they're telling on themselves.
Thing. That's what it is. It becomes like a confession. And I find that to be fascinating and entertaining. I'll be lying if I don't find it funny, because I do find it funny. It's astonishing to me how rattled they get and how the lack of self-awareness is truly. I mean, you know, yes, we're journalists and we have we do our jobs and we're professional, but it doesn't mean that people can't disagree can't criticize us. And to react like children, the way that they do, as if they are some sort of demigods and they are celebrities. That to me is like, pathetic.
And the cultural Twitter community, well, not only will they call you out, they will find the most entertaining way of calling you out possible. And you will deal with it for weeks.
Yeah. No, but it's like, listen, cultural Twitter, you know, it's baptism by fire. You know what I mean? You have to learn to roll with the punches there, because that is the funniest. Like, cultural Twitter is just this phenomenon that just exists.
Yeah,
in so many languages. It is in English and Italian, and it's hilarious. I mean, you have to be. You can't take yourself too seriously. You just can't. And if you do, you're gonna get destroyed, and it's gonna be very, very funny.
Very funny. Very public. Very out there. The community never disappoints.
No, it doesn't. I love it. I think cultural Twitter is just pure comedy. I love it. I think they the stuff they come up with is just, you know, when the AI, the Grok thing came, I mean, I just, you know, today is canceled because I was just laughing at the insanity of these things that they come up with.
The Lord of the Rings set AI crossover was incredible.
Of course. Do you know what I mean? Stuff like that. It's just insane.
Yeah.
And
it's a great place to be. It's a great place to be. Yeah, Thank you so much. It's a funny place to be. It is. Thank you so much for jumping on, Nima.
Anytime.
Keep the content coming. And in the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza
ragazzi. Before we go, that's the end of the show.
Yes.
I want to thank you and Gianni. I love what you guys do with the pod. Keep doing that. I want to wish you, Gianni, every listener, everyone listening who celebrates Christmas and Buon Natale, Happy New Year, and really looking forward to listening to your pods and to engaging with everyone in the year to come.
Thank you, Nima. Couldn't have said it better myself. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.